From the studios of Books in Motion, this is Brian Holsapple reading Requiem for a Ruler of Worlds by Brian Daly. Now let's begin with Requiem for a Ruler of Worlds. Prologue. In the Time of the Third Breath. Storm clouds for my winding sheet, Caspar Weir thought with approval as his chair floated out over the meadow. A towering black front was rolling toward him, outlined in blue-green by guileless Giles, the larger of Epiphany's two moons. That he'd helped nature along, ordering his meteorological engineers to shape the night's tempest, didn't detract from Weir's enjoyment. He was accustomed to arranging things to suit himself, and, he'd decided, a person as close to death as he could be forgiven a little theatricality. Certainly his life had been filled with high drama, triumphs, and defeats. He wondered what they'd say about him when he was gone. Perhaps a paraphrasing of an ancient earth barb, one of his favorites. He was never more popular than when he died. 50 light-years inside what had, within living memory, been a special corner of hell, Director Weir, sometimes known as Weir the Defender, touched a control on the arm of his chair. It descended slowly toward the meadow's thick, tangled carpet of ribbon grass. By craning his head a bit, panting with the effort, feeling dizziness assail him again, he could see his home, stronghold, and palace, Frostpile. It was a lofty dream megastructure, veined like intaglio, and lighting the night. Frostpile was composed of domes, turrets, and spires. Citadels like shark fins. Outlying forms that often put visitors in mind of moored dirigibles cut from crystal. Begun almost 30 standard years earlier, it wasn't quite completed yet. A pity. Director Weir winced as the chair jostled the least bit, settling onto the oily ribbon grass. He automatically reached for a control to make built-in medical apparatus mute his pain. But the control wasn't there. He'd chosen to soar forth from Frostpile in his old chair, unencumbered by machinery that was fighting a futile holding action. At least this is a seat of power, he thought, and not a flying geriatrics clinic. Its arms, of beautiful teak from brimstone, worn by his hands and the years, comforted him. The chair had served him for a decade before the damned Sawbones and his sister had browbeaten him into using an airborne deathbed. He smiled his chagrin at his own absent-mindedness and took his hand away from where the missing control ought to be, lowering it into his lap slowly, trembling with the effort. No pain interdiction tonight. No message blockers or neuroinhibitors. No dulling drugs. He wanted to experience everything, even the pain. It was time to die. The Death Watch had already summoned together loved ones, friends, and allies, along with others for whom he had little or no regard. If it made them feel better to gather there on Epiphany, the director had no objection, so long as they left him in peace. Doubtless enemies in many places were keeping their own shadow vigil. The repercussions of his death would be felt far beyond the relatively small volume of the 19 systems he ruled. His momentary twinge had been swallowed up in the deep, steady aching he'd endured for so long. Now he watched the storm clouds roll in, right on schedule. He nodded without realizing that he did. His engineers were expensive, but they were the best, and they asked no questions. He knew he could trust them to keep their mouths shut, too. Good girls, even though Sonia's eyes had been brimming over when he'd given the order. Everyone knew his fondness for good, bracing weather. At least, he tweaked himself, you're fond of it now that you don't have to campaign in it anymore. The black avalanche of clouds engulfed the sky, spreading and advancing. As he watched, it blotted out the strewn.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?